Good afternoon, good afternoon, good afternoon. It is a Tuesday, January the 23rd, 2018. 1:23:18. 12 minutes past 1 o'clock. You're tuned into the Now program, and I am Scott Spears. And we want to thank legendary comedian Shecky Green for coming on in hour number one. He is hilarious. 91 years old and still so quick, so funny. Always a pleasure to have Shecky on the show, so we thank him for joining us in the first hour of the program today. And a programming note, tomorrow here on WWGH Radio, we will be joined live in studio by the 40th Treasurer of the United States under President Bill Clinton, Mary Ellen Withrow, live in the studio tomorrow for the entire two-hour program, 12:10 to 2 p.m. And with the Ohio governor's race and everything that's been going on nationally, it will be fun to have Mary Ellen in the studio and have her take calls. Now, we come to this hour. There are few people who are in this man's category. Back when television was pretty much three channels, to have a hit series was certainly something in those days, because not many series saw the day of light, because there wasn't YouTube and there wasn't Netflix and there barely was cable television at the time. His show, he'll correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe premiered after the Super Bowl one year and was one of the highest rated television series of its day. The Greatest American Hero. By the way, he also was in a cult classic movie, Carrie, and his mother was Della Street in the Perry Mason television series and all of the additional movies that came after for so many years, right up until Raymond Burr's death, and he also was in some of those movies. Of course you know who I'm talking about by now. It is William Catt, but before we go to him, we got the request as soon as we announced he was going to be on the show yesterday. So here you go. For all you people, Greatest American Hero fans, I'm sure you can guess what this is. And it is a pleasure to welcome to these microphones William Catt. How would you hear that?
Wow. Wow, what a setup. My own theme music and everything.
Oh my goodness, when you hear that song all these years later, what do you think?
It's fun to have a piece of music that's so established with my persona. You know, I got the benefits of that. Thank you, Joey Scarberry, for singing a hit, you know?
You know, when I look back at television, there are very few series that were tremendously popular that also had a tremendously popular song that still endures today.
I don't know which was more became more famous, the song or the TV series. That would be a discussion to have with Mike Post, perhaps.
How did the role of Ralph come to you?
I was doing a play in New York, Michelle Tremblay play, off Broadway, the last season at the Phoenix Rep, and I joined the cast. It was coming from the Guthrie Theater, and they added two new players. One was Diana Wiest, and myself, and we ended up doing that on off Broadway, and I got the script for Greatest American Hero was sent to me by my then agent, Michael Black. And I read it and I thought it was hysterically funny, laugh out loud funny, but I wasn't interested in doing television at the time. I was quite content being in New York and doing theater. But being that I had a 10-month-old son and, you know, it's hard to live on off-Broadway salary, I conceded that I would at least meet with the producer or writer, who was Steven. So he got on his jet and flew out to New York. We had dinner, and he was so charming and gracious and such a wonderful guy that I agreed to do it. So the day that we ended, we did a Sunday matinee, and I got on a plane and came back to Los Angeles. I dyed my hair blonde because at the time my hair was dyed brown to do the play. We started the very next day, and there was no discussion about the red suit at all, because that frightened me to death. But I did see it that day, and I was just mortified.
Now, the suit. Where did the suit come from, and why did it mortify you?
Well, you know, at the time, I had some successful film projects, and I was doing some pretty good theater at the time. I came out of South Coast Repertory, a repertory company that was quite reputable in Orange County, and I was afraid of getting pigeonholed in wearing a costume at the time. It wasn't like today when you have all these wonderful Ed Norton and, you know, Hemsworth that want to have these tremendous franchises. It wasn't like that then. I was afraid of getting pigeonholed. And for a time being, I think that I was. But fortunately, that stigmatism wore off after a time after the show was over.
Coming to a series like that, of course, your mother had been mm-hmm. a big success in television on Perry Mason. Did she give you any advice on television?
On TV, no, because honestly, I was pursuing the theater, you know, and that's where I felt the most welcome was on stage, and I really didn't think much about doing television until it just appeared to me, you know, out of the blue. But I wasn't planning on making a career in television. I was quite content staying in New York.
Obviously, her son is in the series, assume. But did she like the series? Did she like the concept and the whole thing?
Oh, God, yes. It was a lot of fun. You know, she was, her and my father. You failed to mention that my dad was also an actor, Bill Williams. He did a lot of Westerns as a young man, and was most famous for Kit Carson, and the two of them met doing Clay Pigeon on set once, and they fell in love, and they were both very successful actors.
What is it like to grow up with famous parents?
Well, you know, you ask anyone who has parents that are in the industry, you don't know any different. There's no perspective when you're growing up. It's not till you get much older that you begin to have perspective and you realize what a unique childhood that you had. You know,
were there
getting getting to hang out with, you know, with some of the people that we got to hang out with.
That was actually my next question. Because your parents were so successful in the business, what stars of the day would have been coming by the house or meeting them for dinner?
Gee whiz. I had met Mitchum, and I mean, my mom had worked with Jimmy Stewart and James Cagney and Larry Parks and Robert Young and McMurray and Charlton Heston. I can only remember meeting Heston and Mitchum and just a few of the people that she was really rubbing shoulders with in the late 30s and 40s. You know, and by the time I came around in the early 50s, a lot of those folks had you know, moved out of my mom's circle, you know. So, but they were fun. I mean, I stayed friends with Betty White for many, many years. My mom and her were great friends, and you know, Raymond Burr, of course, was a long, long friend of the family's. Long before I got to work with him, I knew him from the time I was a young man. I wanted to hang out and go into Hollywood to when my mom was working on the original Perry Masons, and he became a great friend of the family.
What kind of guy was he?
Very quiet. He stayed to himself, but just. Very gracious. Always loved me and my mom's kids, and her and my mom were just dear, dear friends.
When you're growing up, you have two parents who are in the acting business. Did you ever think of anything else that you wanted to be?
You have that thing growing up. I flew for a long time. I thought I was going to be a pilot. When I was in college, I wanted to fly for one of the big companies, and that didn't work out. And, you know, I toyed with being a musician. I still play music all the time, but, you know, it grew and became a hobby. I think I would have liked to have done anything working with my hands, landscape, architecture, or the likes. But, you know, you when you're in your early 20s and whatnot, you just begin to follow the money, and that's what I did. You know, I started making money as an actor, and I stayed with it because it seemed like the right thing to do.
Did you attend acting classes and things like...
Oh, I did. I did many, many acting classes from the time I was 17 and first started in school. I pursued acting classes. I studied not only with some of the great actors that I got to work with at South Coast Repertory, but you know, I worked with actors up at ACT in San Francisco. I took classes. I was under scholarship at now defunct program at the Los Angeles Music Theater. I had a scholarship there. I went to school for 4 months under scholarship, and that was a 6-day-a-week program, all day. That was great fun. I was accepted to go to Cal Arts the second year it was open, but I didn't go because I landed a touring company of Sound of Music playing Rolf, and I took the money and went off on a national tour instead.
When you get a script, whether it's television or stage, how do you become that person?
I don't know. I think that I don't know. I think that the first thing any actor would tell you is that it just begins with the research. You start researching that character. What are his habits? What does he do? What's his backstory? What kind of a person was he? What's the psychology behind the things that he does? And usually it takes time. You get time when you're doing a film. When you're doing television, you have to move very quickly. And for a lot of the more difficult roles, what a lot of actors do is they'll hire an acting coach that will work directly with them one-on-one, which is sometimes what I've done in the past.
when you got to television, it was an extreme hit, gigantic hit right out of the gate. What was that like to be instant celebrity?
Well, it was scary. It was scary when that happened. It was scary, first of all, when Carrie came out, when the film Carrie that I had done years before. I was kind of living in a white ghetto area with a couple other fellows in a rundown neighborhood. And when Carrie came out, everything changed because there'd be people hanging out in my front yard wanting to meet me and talk to me. And that was very peculiar. And then again, when I did Hero, and that became a great hit, the strangest thing is that you never knew how many friends you had until that happens. That's the biggest awakening.
When you have such a big success out of the gate, was it hard to... Were you aware that it was rating so well while you're doing it, that it's a big hit, that... It's the biggest thing on television.
Well, you know, at the time when you're doing a TV series, you're working. Typically, it's a 14 or a 15 hour day. But from the time you get up and get in your car and go to work, and the time you get home, I mean, I'd quite typically get up at 5 a.m, and I wouldn't get home till 10 o'clock at night, and that was 5 days a week, and then usually on a weekend they had you doing something, some sort of promotion. So it was, you don't really have time to do much of anything else other than just work.
Yeah, two big co-stars in that series, mm-hmm. Connie Sellecca. What was it like mm-hmm. to work with her?
Well, Connie is just a delight. I mean, her and Bob Culp and myself, it was kind of lightning in a bottle. I mean, the personalities that you saw on the TV series, that's how we related to one another, just in our private personal lives. We had that kind of chemistry. it was just a lot of fun all day long. Connie was delightful, specifically because in the morning she was just famous for her blue jokes early in the morning. And then she'd have me laughing, and we'd have each other laughing all day long. There's nothing better than getting up and going to work and laughing all day, you know?
Robert Culp, of course, had come off the run with I Spy, very well known, mm-hmm. Different age category than you and Connie. What was it like working with him?
You know, Bob was kind of a curmudgeonly character, even at that time. That's kind of the character that he played, but he was a little bit, underneath all of that rough exterior, he just had a heart of gold. He was just a lovely man. We didn't get along very well, you know, this is a famous story. We didn't get along very well for the first 2 weeks of the shoot. But then one day we had a good talk when we arrived at a detente, and we figured out a way to work together that would be beneficial for both of us. And then we ended up being great friends, and we stayed great friends right up until his death.
What was the problem the first 2 weeks?
You know, I don't know. Maybe I don't know. I don't know what it was. I think there was just, I had a big ego and he had a big ego, and I think that got in the way of some of the work. But in all honesty, it kind of worked to our benefit in the show, because there was that kind of animosity toward one another the characters had initially, and then they slowly grew to be great friends in the show, and Bob and I grew to be great friends outside of the show.
When you were first given the script for the show, how was the character of Ralph described to you?
Oh, gee whiz. Honestly, I don't remember the specifics. But I think I figured at the time that I was going to play it like a normal guy that was caught in an absurd situation, very much like the show. And so it kind of wrote itself and gave me great hints how to play it, and that's the way I did.
At what point did you find, we talked about it earlier, at what point did you finally make peace with the suit?
I think 10 years maybe after I finished the show.
Took that long.
Yeah. I really didn't know until the, you know, all the different, you know, the cons around the country, you know, all the cons, San Diego Con and Dragon Con and Chiller and all these other cons, they weren't around right after the show. They didn't happen until the mid to late 80s. That's when they started happening. And when I started attending those some years, like in the mid 90s, I think, late 90s, I started to attend some of those. Then I discovered what a indelible character Ralph had become to the general public. But before that, I didn't really know that I had left a watermark at all on the public. But that character was really loved, I think.
The show had such a tremendous start. Like I say, right out of the gate, huge ratings. And almost the flip side, when it went off the air, it almost kind of bottomed out just as quickly. What do you think happened?
You know, I don't know. We just, one day, we were on set. It was a Friday, I remember, and we were shooting out in Santa Clarita at the, you know, the north part of Los Angeles, and they said, we're done, and they pulled the plug. You know, when we got put on the air on a Friday night, the show got put on the air opposite Dallas, which was the number one show at the time. And we all kind of knew that that was the death knell. That was the slot that they put shows in that they wanted to die. They didn't have faith in anymore. And I think that came about because, you know, Bob Culp and I wanted it to be a show about, be more of a, we could stand on a podium and do some really interesting, deal with some really interesting social issues. And I think the network at the time wanted us to be chasing monsters down alleyways. And I think that was the rub. And they got tired of putting up with our shenanigans, and they just said, we're going to kill this show and put something else here.
Were you okay with it coming to an end at that point?
Oh, yeah, I was okay. You know, two years later... one of the networks called and wanted to put it back on the air because it was doing so well in on reruns. But by then, I was already working on the Perry Mason specials, and I was doing 4 movie of the weeks a year, and I was quite content doing that and then doing some theater in between those. So I didn't really want to go back and do more Greatest American Heroes. Although if I knew then what I know now, I probably would have changed my mind and gone back and done another 3, 4, or 5 years, you know?
Mm. It's interesting that it so quickly in syndication did become such a gigantic hit, almost as big as when it started. But you did say you were typecast for a while.
I was.
What would happen when you would go out for something?
Well, it wasn't, I just wouldn't get it. I think the only thing substantial that I got during that time was I got to do Pippin for home box office with Ben Vereen and Cheetah Rivera, and Fosse directed that, although he didn't take credit. He was there and directed it. I mean, that probably stands at the zenith of my career in the theater, certainly. But other than that, I was not able to get anything, anything of substantive as an actor, because I was considered a cartoon character, you know.
But it finally did wear away.
It did. But you know, at the time, I mean, nowadays you have Robert Downey and Ed Norton and all these other guys that love having these giant franchises. And there's no stigma attached to any of that. But at the time when I did Hero, there was a big stigma attached to it.
you talk about going to work on the Perry Mason series. For those who don't remember, the original run was in the early days of television, but in the 80s, NBC brought Perry back, and it was a gigantic hit, so there were four Perry Mason movies a year for a long time, even after Raymond.
Nine years that ran. I stayed with him for 5 of those years. And then a wonderful actor named Billy Moses took over for me and did the subsequent remaining 4 years.
What was it like to go to work with your mom?
You know, anyone who has a great relationship with their parents knows that how lovely it must have been, and it was for me. I mean, she had worked with, although we had worked together on Greatest American Hero, she played my mom on that. I had done a film, a John Milius film earlier, Big Wednesday, with Gary Busey and Jan Michael Vincent, and she played my mom in Big Wednesday. So, again, it was just to work with her on the Perry Masons was lovely. You know, go to work every day and see her and spend, it was like 5 weeks, I think we did it at the time. The movie of the weeks were about 5 weeks long. And so 20 weeks a year, I got to spend it with my mom. And that was lovely. We had a very close relationship right up until she passed this last year.
When you were doing Greatest American Hero and she played your mother in other things, did they just come to you and say, well, we're going to have your mom on the show. Do you think your mom would like to do this?
Oh, yeah. Of course. Yeah, Stephen came to me. Absolutely.
So there was, and she was always glad to do it.
Oh, of course. I think she made 2 appearances on the show in the 3 years that, 3.5 years that we were on the air. Yeah.
When you were doing the Perry Mason movies, you had known Raymond Burr, but now you're working with him. How was that?
Well, that was great. It was like working with a beloved uncle. You know, he you know, again on the set, he was a very when Raymond walked onto a set. Kind of all the air in the room got sucked out because his personality was that big, and he commanded that much respect on a set.
You know, it's an amazing thing, and I cannot think of another time when this happened. But even after Raymond suddenly died, I believe in 93 or 94, they continued the Perry Mason movies. I think Hal Holbrook stepped in there for a little bit. What was it? Did you ever talk to your mom about doing those after Perry had passed away?
You know, I might have. I don't recall offhand having that specific conversation with her. But I know she was greatly affected by his passing, and I think she was. She had great friendships with a lot of other people on that were connected to that show, you know, the other cast members and the crew members, and she didn't want to not do the shows because she knew that if she didn't appear on the show, that the show probably would have folded and all those people would have lost their jobs. So I think that's why she continued on with the show after Raymond's passing.
You know, I think back to that. I saw an old TV guide the other day when he passed away, and it wouldn't be thought of as anything today, but Raymond was same-sex, in a same-sex relationship at the time, and it became a gigantic scandal when he died.
Yeah.
What was that like for somebody you knew? He didn't hide that, did he?
No, but, you know, no one would have ever known at the time. I mean, we knew, but it was never an issue. Like, you know, my family, although, you know, I think my mom and my dad were both Republican, but they were very progressive and left-leaning when it came to social norms. And I don't think that bothered my mom, my dad, or anyone in my family at all. It was just the way it was. And, you know, thereafter, he had a longtime lover with Mr. Benavides. And, my gosh, they were together 30 years. And my mom, right until the time she died, was great friends with Robert.
You talked about it. Your mom passed away last year, lived a great long life. What was it like to lose her?
It's dreadful.
Yeah.
Very, very dreadful. You know, when the thing that happens when you lose somebody that's been the matriarch of the family and around that long is that they've been there all along, and you expect them to be there for the rest of your life. And when they go, everything changes. I mean, it's like the solar system is thrown out of whack because you're no longer orbiting around the sun, you know?
It's tough for anybody who loses somebody. It's very difficult.
She was a lovely, lovely, gracious, generous, wonderful human being that just made everybody feel special that had a chance to meet her. She was just lovely.
You know, I think I was reading when she passed away last year, one of the last things, if not the last thing she did, and correct me if I'm wrong, was the Perry Mason movies, and she lived another, over 30 years. Did she ever want to act again?
No. No. She was quite content to stay home and put that aside. You know, her and my dad had... my dad, after he kind of retired from acting, he became a developer, and so they had a bit of a real estate empire, and so my mom was well off. She didn't have to work, and she didn't want to work. She would rather stay home and be a mom.
When the Perry Masons were over and Greatest American Hero had ended in the 90s, where did you see your career?
Me?
Yeah.
I did a lot of theater in the 90s and up into, I think, 2000. You know, one of the great things I did in the early 2000s, I worked with Randy Newman for 6 months in Seattle with a great cast. And then after that, I came back and I did a play at the Pasadena Playhouse with Sheldon Epps. And that was pretty much it for me theater-wise. That was the last thing I did in the early 2000s. And I promised my wife, because before that I was out of town for 6 months a year for many, many years, and I promised her I wouldn't travel like that anymore. So I pretty much stayed home. I didn't have much television work in the 90s. 95, I did Problem Child 3. That was kind of a fun run. We thought that was going to be a pilot. And it never made it. You know, I don't think we could ever, you know, people felt as if that character, the dad there in Problem Child, that was always John Ritter's role. And I think they somehow felt betrayed when I stepped in there to try and have a go at it. You know, it's hard to compete with John Ritter. He was like one of the great actors of our time, at least in my time.
You touched on it earlier on in the interview. The movie Carrie. How did you get that role?
This is kind of a story that's been told. But Brian De Palma and George Lucas were casting at the same time. Brian was doing Carrie, and George was, of course, casting for Star Wars. And I guess I was well enough liked by both of them that I got to finally audition on camera for both of those films. And although I didn't get the Luke Skywalker part, I did get Tommy Ross, and I was pretty happy with it. I mean, it launched my career for sure.
Seeing the success and the things that Star Wars has done, still does to this day, would you have liked to have had that?
That's a rhetorical question, of course. Yeah.
Well, I didn't want to use the word regret. I didn't want to get in. Do you regret it?
I don't regret it because because Mark is, you know, Mark Hamill has just done a wonderful job with it, and he deserves all the accolades that he has gotten and is getting now. I'm not jealous at all. I would have liked to have gotten the role, but I'm not jealous. No.
When people come up to you today, what do they remember you from? Mostly.
Well, it's either Carrie or Greatest American Hero, or sometimes the film House that I did in the 80s was quite successful. And when I'm on the East Coast, people still tend to remember me for Pippin, and that brings me great pleasure.
When you look back at your career, what was the high moment? If you could put something in a time capsule, what would it be?
It had to be there, you know, in television. Greatest American Hero was tremendous for me. In theater, I don't know. That's a toss-up. I mean, Pippin was wonderful. Like, I got to work with Jack Hofsis, who directed The Elephant Man and won a Tony. I got to do Days of Wine and Roses, the world stage premiere with him. I've gotten to work with the Pulitzer Prize winning author, Marsha Norman. I got to work with Randy Newman. That was certainly a highlight, doing that up in Seattle. That's it in my personal life, just my kids and my wife, you know.
Was there ever a role or a time, something you did that you consider that to be the part you'd like to forget of your career?
There are many of those films. Every actor has those films. Yes. I think I was going through a terrible divorce. Many years ago, 30 years ago, I was going through a terrible, terrible divorce, and I think I took a number of projects strictly to pay the attorneys, and I wish that I had not done some of those early films, but that's the way it is, and hopefully people have forgotten about those things.
When you look back on it now, how would you describe your career? Is it a theater career? Is it a television, a movie? You've had success in all three.
Oh, I don't know. I've just struggled to make it to the middle rung of the ladder. I don't ever think I had great success, but I did have my more than my share of my 15 minutes of fame, and I've always been happy for that, you know.
What do you make of this reality TV, cable news world we live in now?
Well, you know, you kind of saw the ad, you know, many, many years ago with all the tabloid papers. You saw what the creation of fake news. I remember being on the cover of Us magazine, and I was so angry at the, you know, that they said that I was a failure at the young, I was a failure at being a new young Robert Redford, but I was a success as a goofball television star, and I remember being very angry about that. So that was, you know, you can see where fake news had its roots. Was in the early tabloids, and then it just was all about selling copy, you know. And I think that's what a lot of news publications do now. And with reality television, and speaking to that specifically, there's nothing real about reality television. It's all scripted, you know. Anyone who thinks otherwise should do some research, because it's all scripted. There's always typically a table of writers and producers surrounding that create these scenarios for these reality actors. There's nothing real.
You know, I was watching the TV Land Awards a few years ago, and I remember mm-hmm. hearing the story. We had Bob Culp on the show one point, and I think he had even said you did not enjoy the suit. But you put it on for the TV. I was shocked to see you in that after hearing the stories. Why did you decide to do that?
I had friends working on the show. And there was a lot of fans out there that by that time I realized what an indelible mark it had left on the lives of many of the kids who were watching the show who were now grown up. And I wanted to pay homage to that character and to give some joy to some of the people who love that character.
You know, I'm watching television now, again, a little more than I had been, because Will and Grace is back. I think they've done a Full House remake. They Boy Meets World remake. Roseanne is coming in March, I think. It's certainly not impossible. Would you do a Greatest American Hero reboot?
Well, it'd have to be the Greatest American Grandfather Hero, you know?
I don't know about that.
Push me around in a wheelchair, you know?
You and Connie could get back together.
Yeah, nothing, you know, I never say never. You know, acting is not anything that I pursue anymore, but if someone approaches me and there's something fun to do and I'm healthy enough, then sure, that might be a fun idea.
You know, it's very interesting because I think it's fascinating that the powers were in the suit, not the person. That's what's fascinating about that show to me. So in today's,
I remember Steve Cannell telling that the way they approached the show every week would sit around and try and find a funny scenario. And then they would back a plot into it, you know. And that's the way the show was written. It was always conceived as a comedy.
We have talked about not getting the Star Wars role and not doing The Greatest American Hero when they wanted to redo it again 2 years after it ended. But is there something you could have done that you regret not doing?
I'm sure there is. I probably would have liked to have done more theater had I had the opportunity. But my life went another direction after the early 2000s. And so I try not to live with too many regrets. I'm quite content in my life. And so although I might have a passing a wave of regret, I don't tend to live there very long.
Is there still something you would like to do in the acting profession?
No, I don't really pursue. I don't think about pursuing acting anymore. There's still some things I might like to do as a producer that I work on, but not too much as acting. I think the last thing I did as an actor, if my friends call me and they say there's something to do and I like it and have the time, I'll do it. Last thing I did was I have a new film coming out called Man from Earth, Holocene, that'll be out in the next few weeks. And that was because we did the first one some 10 years ago, and it was quite successful as a cult film. And this one was a great script. I mean, that one was a Jerome Bixby script, who is famous for a lot of science fiction writing. And this one was a takeoff on his script and was produced by his son Emerson and Eric Wilkinson and it had a lot of the same integrity and there was a lot of dignity to the characters, and so I did that. But that's probably the last thing that I'll do as an actor.
Why is that?
I lost my mojo for it, you know.
Anything
lost in my mojo for it.
Do you attribute that to anything?
No.
just time.
Yeah, maybe just I don't know. I've come to my senses.
Well, you know, your mom had a very nice life after her career, so that's nice.
She did.
If you could, if you're not going to act, if you could write the next 40 years, how would you write them? How do you want them to turn out?
Well, I don't think I have 40 years, but I just you know, as you get older, you just want, you want your greatest joys to be, and happiness to be in your children. You want for them to be happy and successful and have a good life. And you know, I stand with other parents when I join them in feeling the same way. I think about my kids and their happiness. That's all I want now.
Aside from your parents, who was your favorite person to work with?
My favorite person to work with. Gee whiz, I don't know. Connie Selleck and Bob Culp probably stand up there. You know, they were just great joy to work with. They were a lot of fun.
You know, and Connie was great, absolutely. But, you know, Bob Culp had such a great, great career and was such an interesting guy to watch. What do you think made him, from one actor to another, what made him a good actor?
He always told the truth. You know, whether he was being funny or dramatic, he always told the truth, and I believed him. You know, and that's what made him a great actor.
You know, the one thing I remember from the interview with him that we did, I think it's been about 10 years ago now, the two people he said he really liked working with were Bill Cosby and Bill Catt. I do remember him saying that.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, and they were both great. His television. And he also, he said something that echoes in my mind today, as he said, you know, a lot of people thought Greatest American Hero was a step down for him. It was a comic series, and he said he thought that was one of the best series that he'd ever done. He loved it.
Yeah. Yeah, he was terrific in that show. I mean, he was really, if I was the right hand, he was the left hand, or if I was the left hand, he was the right hand. That show was just, the casting, him and I and Connie, was just lightning in a bottle. And I think that's what makes a good television show. You were talking about Will and Grace earlier. I mean, without that cast, that show wouldn't work. But it's the chemistry between them that makes that show so fantastic.
Absolutely.
Or How I Met Your Mother, or the other great sitcom Friends, that's just the secret of a great show is the casting.
When you look back, obviously you go to these Comic-Cons occasionally and things that are done. How do you hope those people remember you? Because everything's kept now on YouTube, and who knows what it'll be in 50 years. How do you hope they'll remember you when they see you in these great series?
You just hope that it brings back good memories. You know, when I go out to these cons and I'm there and I'm meeting people, they come to relive some of the great memories that they have. You know, Greatest American Hero was one of those shows that when those people were kids, even if they didn't get along with their parents, it was something that the parents and the kids could both watch at the same time, and each of them gets something out of the show, and that makes me feel great. That makes me feel great.
It should. And today, having you on has made me feel great. I've really enjoyed this. I'm so glad we were able to get together.
You there?
Yeah. Thank you so much. I've appreciated your time today. See, we did 50 minutes. No problem.
Gee whiz! You went by in the blink of an eye.
Blink, and we didn't have to promote anything.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for having me on. God bless. My best to all your fans out there listening to you.
Absolutely. You stay well, and maybe we can do it again one day.
Okay, my friend. God bless.
You too. Bye bye. Bill Catt, William Catt from The Greatest American Hero, and for this day, this is Scott Spears heading for the dugout.
To legendary zoologist from The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson and Conan O'Brien,